John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And good morning. We made it through another week here as we get to Friday. And, of course, hope everybody has a good weekend. Hope the weather perks up a little bit. Still has been reasonably dry this week, although I guess there is going to be a little bit of rain coming up today. Possible chance of rain, but let's hope that doesn't happen. But we got lots going on. It's going to be a very busy weekend and a very busy day. So let's get started with the five biggest stories of the day.
Number one.
And the 1-2 on the way, swinging a ground ball wide at first, taken by Hicks. He's got an underhand flip to Green at the bag, and it's in time to get Gamble. And the Tigers won it tonight, a final score of 3-2, and the Tigers take game one of this four-game series.
Well, what's amazing, of course, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Mariners lose 3-2, and they just don't seem to be able to do a lot against the Tigers. The games are close, but bullpen came in after a very good performance by Marco Gonzalez, who went 5 2/3 innings, gave up 5 hits and 1 run, but Nick Vincent had a bad outing, and so allowing 2 runs off 2 bases-loaded singles. So that the 2-out bases-loaded single, and of course, that knocked it down. Guillermo Heredia continues to hit very well. He had 3 hits for the Mariners and some roster shuffling as Ryan Cook comes up. He looked okay pitching after 2 surgeries and 2 out of the last 3 years, retiring 4 Detroit Tiger batters. Christian Bergman goes down. And I don't know, Maura, I just get the feeling that particularly with Nelson Cruz not playing, and I think he may be able to go tonight, and certainly the suspension of Robinson Cano, the more I just think this team's it's the gas tank right now. It needs recharge. It needs refilled. I just think they're starting to show fatigue, hitting wise too.
I mean, it's a little dismaying that they were kind of pulling out some of these close one run games there for a while, and obviously with Cruz out hurt and Cano having the suspension, it seems like things are starting to feel a little bit overwhelming. But I mean, they were playing some pretty good baseball, and it's still early here, so I'm holding out hope.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, they're still 5 games above 500 now. They've pretty much given up as many runs as they scored, which, of course, is an indicator they're more the 500 team. But, you know, the Detroit, I guess, maybe is a little bit better than we presumed. I mean, again, they're getting now within a couple games of 500, so they've kind of bounced back a little bit. But, again, the Mariners at home right now have had troubles. I mean, they seem to be more successful on the road than they are at home, which is a little bit strange because you figure that the pitching staff is geared up to do well in this ballpark, and the bullpen is struggling right now, and now they're starting the Tacoma shuffle, I guess you could say, in the sense that you know, because of now the injuries on the pitching staff and all the problems, some of the problems they have to now bring Bergman up once and then send him down, and Ryan Cook now comes up, and so that system is started just like they did last year. But the key to this team right now is hitting, and they just need to hit a little bit better, maybe a little bit better in some of the fielding and stuff like that. But overall, I mean, it's a 4-game series coming against the Tigers. So tonight it's going to be Felix Hernandez going against Michael Fulmer. Game time is 7:10. The pregame starts at 7, and that's Around the Diamond. It's brought to you by Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business.
Number two.
He's just such a talented guy. He's a really good athlete and very confident and familiar with second base, obviously. So he's going to get probably a little bit more thorough workout today before the game in pregame. Probably needs to get some live balls off the bat in batting practice and see where we're at after that.
So D. Gordon, at least, was a designated hitter last night, and tonight he makes the transition back to second base. And now there's a report by Ken Rosenthal that he may stay there through the rest of the season. And if that happens, it would take Robinson Cano and maybe put him at first base in some kind of a DH type of role. I don't know how that's going to work because, you know, Ryan Healy's doing such a good job with his hitting, and I think that has, you know, lived up to his expectations once he got here in the trade. But he reported that the major league source is saying that Gordon may stay at second, or maybe go to second more next year, okay, which makes sense because, you know, they have Healy. But again, Healy, I think more Healy's done really well, hasn't he? What, he has 8 home runs?
Slow offensive start this year, but ever since he came back from injury, he's on fire.
Yeah, he really has. And so that one kind of a little bit of a puzzling one. They definitely need Robinson Cano back. I mean, that's why it's hopeful that he's going to be in the lineup tonight going against the Tigers. He's missed 2 games with that bruised right foot. And what are they they up to now? 25 hit batsmen? 25, which is just ridiculous for as many times as they get hit. But again, they're trying to hold the plate and all that stuff. And I guess one of the things that's interesting about what Ken Rosenthal said, that they didn't want to take Cano out of second base immediately, because what he wanted to do is get the record for home runs by second baseman. And so now, of course, the 80-game suspension has kind of thrown everything up for grabs at the moment. But in the end, Gordon now will make that move to second base. He'll be there for, 78 more games. We'll see how much longer it's going to be overall.
Number three.
Seahawks begin their organized team activities on Monday. They've got just one draft pick left unsigned after Shaquem Griffin agreed to terms on his rookie deal yesterday. So third-round pick Rasheem Green is the only unsigned draft pick. This is, I believe, the last of the voluntary workouts, phase three.
Baby.
And after this, they will begin a mandatory minicamp, will be the next deal. So I will not expect Earl Thomas here for this. And then we'll all sit together and wait to find out whether or not he has plans to tank the season once they become mandatory.
Yep.
Or if he's going to try to get in line.
So, things good on the signing front. Rasheem Green is the only unsigned Seahawk rookie. If their deals get done yesterday with Griffin and also Flowers, he gets his deal done, and it looks like business is going pretty well in that regard. And league-wide, it's been great as far as signings. I mean, we're up to about 181, so there's about 75 guys that haven't been signed, and I'm sure more are going to get done this afternoon. And it wouldn't surprise me if Green gets done sometime this afternoon. More, I still remember yesterday, one of the text questions was so concerned about Griffin, whether he was going to get some days back, and what ends up is like, oh, is he going to get cut? Well, he ends up, I thought, I knew there was no problem, and he got the deal done probably as the guy was texting.
Yeah, I think maybe some of the fans don't realize these things are rarely an issue. It just sometimes it takes a little longer than others. I think Joey Bosa is really the only one I can remember in recent history that had an issue getting signed there with the Chargers.
And his was just dumb. I mean, he's worried about double dipping, and double dipping would be, trying to get the offset if he gets cut and in the fourth or fifth year, because, again, his contract as a first-round pick was fully guaranteed. But what happens is that if you go to another team and collect a salary, you try to get a clause in there that you get the salary plus all the guarantees, and it's like, oh, you're going to hold out for that, which was absolutely crazy. But hey, that's a good thing. If you like the rookie salary cap, and it may not be big for money as it was before, but it is good for getting signings done.
Number four.
Now, when you say you're not surprised, did you suspect it with him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to get into too much detail, Michael. I love Robbie, but yeah, I mean, I'm just not surprised. I don't really want to go too much further, but I think a lot of people are kind of saying the same thing, and Cash kind of, he had to catch himself in an interview a couple days ago, but I mean, just not surprised.
Robbie Cano's assistant was on the list for Biogenesis. Now, of course, he had his assistant, buy stuff for him. Alex Rodriguez got popped by Biogenesis, and Melky got popped. They're best friends. When someone gets lumped into that group, it's because there's evidence. There's a paper trail. There's a smoke trail.
Boy, Mark Teixeira, not being a real good ex-teammate of Robinson Cano, kind of indicating that maybe, just maybe, that he's not surprised that this was happening with the 80-game suspension and the masking agent that has been there. At least he identifies that 5 years ago there was a leak about the Biogenesis list, and of course that was the one that you can see Alex Rodriguez on, and so Cano's assistant was on that, and of course you can tie it into Rodriguez. Fascinating stuff by Teixeira. Not surprised that he got the 80-game suspension because of PEDs.
Number five.
Yeah, we have to ramp it up. We're playing too slow. We're making Bron play hero ball, which is tough to do, especially in the Eastern Conference Finals. We gotta help him. And with that said, we have to give him an opportunity for us to make him feel confident to give us the ball so we can make the right plays.
So it's J.R. Smith talking about how they need to help LeBron, and of course that help would have to start tomorrow as the series continues. Right now Boston leads 2-0 over the Cavs, and I'm just wondering if the Cavs are done. I mean, certainly if they lose tomorrow, it's over, but you figure they should have a decent chance of bouncing back. The Warriors series against the Rocket heats up on Sunday night at 5 o'clock, and Steph Curry has been struggling so far in his playoffs, and we want to get into a lot of playoff discussion right now. When we come back, we're going to talk to Kevin Collapp. Fabro about what's been a fascinating NBA season and a fascinating playoffs. He'll be joining us next. And, of course, you can listen to the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, it's KC and the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Ah, boy, I miss Kevin Calabro. We hear him, but we miss him. And, Kevin, it's great to have you on the Venue Kings Hotline. How you been?
Been doing great, John. Enjoying my stay down here in Portland. Had a very successful year on the court and off. And looking forward now to settling into a great postseason with everybody else. A whole lot of options here. Looks like the Cavaliers are on the ropes, down 2-0, and Houston comes back with a great effort in Game 2 to make that an interesting series again.
You know, big picture, it just seems to me that the NBA is really gaining more popularity, particularly with a younger audience, and I think so much of the playoffs have helped. I mean, having star power, and also I think, you know, certainly the battles going on with TNT and television with Shaq and Barkley. I mean, that's been fascinating. I mean, what's been the biggest thing that you've seen as far as just new interest and grown interest in the NBA?
Well, I think the NBA embraced social media maybe more so and with more fervor and sooner than the other two major sports. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And the personalities, obviously, in the game are larger than life, and you hit on it, the star power. And then, of course, the international outreach of the league. I mean, I go back to the time when I think our first international experience was mid-90s when we were Detlef Schrempf was on our squad. I want to say this was 93-94. The Sonics actually went over and played Reggie Miller and the Pacers in a two-game exhibition over in East Berlin. This was 2 years after the wall had fallen, I think maybe three. And just wild. I mean, the fact that NBA showed up in Berlin was spectacular. And then we played in Sevilla, Spain. So that's just an example of how far back, you know, you go in terms of international exposure and playing internationally. The NBA has always had that outreach. And then, of course, they've embraced foreign athletes as well, whether it be from the continent of Africa or from Europe. There have been some great success stories there as well. So I think that's one other reason it's been a world game, and then that you've seen the kind of numbers that you have and the kind of young numbers that you have flocking to TV and to social media. Because I think NBA, too, makes it much more accessible on all the other social media platforms. So it's kind of a three-pronged effort, I think, that was put in place by David Stern, but certainly advanced with much more sophistication and I think much more of a vision by Adam Silver, his successor.
Yeah, so now Cavaliers look to me to be in trouble. I know before the series I had some questions. I thought, okay, it looks like LeBron's got them all playing well. Then I started to rethink it right before the series started because I looked and I know Boston was missing their top two players. But then I looked at the lineup around LeBron versus the lineup that was there for the Celtics, or, even though they're down. It's like, you know what? Number one, I think certainly the Celtics have four. I mean, they have better players than some of the surrounding players because, you know, about three out of the top six guys for the Cavs came over in those trades. And so you look there and say, advantage Celtics. And then I was like, wait a second, the coaching of Brad Stevens versus Lou, that's another advantage. I mean, is this going to be it for the Cavs?
Well, if they're down 3-0, they're not coming back, because no team in the history of the league in seven-game series down 0-3 is come back to win a series. I think it's something like 0-131. They were down 3-1 in the 2016 finals against the Warriors and did rally to come back and obviously win the finals, but this is a whole different deal now. You hit it on the head. This roster of the Cavaliers has been churned. They made a major trade midway through the year. They signed a trade for Isaiah Thomas, and then Thomas is gone shortly after. It's not even last season, and you know all they can show for it essentially is the eighth pick in the draft. Jordan Clarkson coming over from L.A., Rodney Hood coming over from Utah. These guys, Larry Nance Jr., they just have not clicked. Really, they have not had the time really to gel as a squad since this team was just churned and turned over in February. The Celtics obviously have a little more stability, but not a whole lot more. I mean, when you consider Gordy Hayward, you know, their big free agent signing the offseason, presumably going to be their star, is down. the beginning of the year. You know, does it plays one half of one basketball game, and then Kyrie Irving follows, and you've got one of the most elite point guards in the league, and he's not been in the mix for some time over the last couple of months. So you think, well, Boston's dead in the water, but you're right. Brad Stevens does a great job of cobbling things together and combinations together, and they do have a very good roster. Danny Ainge is one of the shrewdest general managers, wheeler dealers right now in the NBA, and they have a whole lot of assets. But their two wings, Tatum is phenomenal, and Jaylen Brown in his second year really coming on strong. I mean, you've got a rookie and a second-year player playing like guys that have been in the league for 10 years. Al Horford was a tremendous acquisition. He gives them toughness and smarts at the five position. And then Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart have done a terrific job at guard in stepping in for Kyrie Irving. I mean, it's been a seamless transition. So Boston's, they've done a nice job. They've got great eye for talent out there. In the meantime, the Cavaliers are obviously turning the page. All the speculation is that LeBron won't be in Cleveland next year, which really kind of feeds the narrative in the offseason of a whole lot of big changes coming in the league with the possibility that, you know, LeBron would be, the hot rumor is either heading to Philadelphia to pursue a ring and staying in the East, or a new chapter in his career and maybe heading to Los Angeles to play for the Lakers.
Yeah, and of course, be sad for Cleveland, but of course, they've experienced that once before, and I give LeBron credit because, you know, he went back home and gave them the championship that he wanted to. That right. was great on his part.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That was the mission, and, you know, it was unfortunate they had changing the guard in the front office. David Griffin was running the show there, and I thought he did a terrific job. But, you know, LeBron obviously exerts a whole lot of gravity. He really does. And you could say that he's the general manager of that squad. And so it's been an interesting transition to observe there in Cleveland. I mean, when your superstar, John, has a 40-point triple-double, as he did in Game 2, and you get just smacked around the way that the Cavaliers did in that second half, it doesn't give you much hope. I was just looking at some of the numbers. LeBron's averaging 28 points, 10.5 assists, 8.5 rebounds. Kevin Love's averaging 19 points, 11 boards. You'd think your two stars are playing like that, you at least would have a split coming and or feel better about your possibilities of going home in Game 3, but they've had nobody else to score the ball. J.R. Smith's averaging 2 points and shooting 12% in the two games against the Boston Celtics. So it tells you about Boston's, they're focused. I mean, all their numbers, all their stats, they've outpaced the Cavaliers in deflections, block shots, 50-50 balls, box outs. I mean, those, John, are just elemental, fundamental things that the Celtics do extremely well. And I think that's why Stevens is such an extraordinary coach, is because he's been able to get these guys to buy into the fundamentals of the game, which really build your team as a team game and give you a consistency and stability when you get into a series like this against a superstar like LeBron James.
It looked like the Golden State Warriors were going to start to breeze to the championship, but then it looks like defense has improved so much with Houston that this could be a great series.
Yeah, Houston has they're a horrible transition defensive basketball team, primarily because they, on the offensive end, these guys like to get deep into the corners. So when a long shot goes up, and of course they led the league in threes attempted per ball game. When a long shot goes up and it's missed, it usually leads to a long rebound and the other teams are running out, which leaves Houston just scattered defensively, trying to get out of those corners and get down the floor 94 feet to defend. So it's one of the issues that Houston will always have whenever they run that type of offense. But I just thought they showed the ability to spread the basketball. Although they played as many isolation plays in Game 2 as they did in Game 1, when, of course, they were criticized for playing so much ISO, the fact that they had four guys playing ISO instead of just two, which was Paul and Harden in Game 1, I thought was the difference. The ball was moving. It was getting shared. Roll guys were getting involved. P.J. Tucker had an astronomical 21 points in Game 2, which is a playoff career high for him. Known as a defender, now developing into somewhat of a three-point shooter, as you have to be there in Houston. He had a great game. And then Eric Gordon came off the bench and had 27 points. So between those two guys, they shot extraordinarily well, got 48 points. Now the problem is, can they duplicate that moving forward in the series? The Warriors, what's interesting to watch there is Steph Curry, from a health standpoint, does he does he still have the lift with that knee? I mean, he started off 1 of 7 from three-point range. He uncharacteristically had a couple of wild twisting moves to the rim that were totally ineffective, just not like him. I want to see what happens in game three with him. Keep an eye on him early in the game, see what physically, just what he's got in the tank. Because I don't know if the knee is bothering, if it was a case of Houston doubling him, getting the ball out of his hands, what it was they were doing defensively. But he just didn't have the same kind of pop. The offset of that is Kevin Durant is unstoppable, and Houston just doesn't have they don't have an idea how to defend this guy because he's a 7-footer that handles extraordinarily well, shoots the three like nobody's business, loves the mid-range game, and can get to the free throw line where he's, you know, a career 88 or so percent free throw shooter. And he may be their best defender pound for pound in terms of on-ball defense and then protecting the rim as a shot blocker. I can see a scenario where Golden State wins this finals, and KD is your MVP of the finals.
Yeah, but it's going to be interesting to see how they do, and it's going to be great to listen to you. And, of course, I hope everything's going great on the golf course.
Always, John. Best to you, man. It's still clicking, still plugging along. I'm glad you're on the airwaves there in Seattle.
I'm still loving it. Hey, Kevin, thanks for joining us on the Venue Kings Hotline, and have a great summer.
All right, Professor. Talk to you, man.
Kevin Calabro. And, of course, you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Well, we'll go under further review coming up next. This is the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Under further review with John Clayton.
We'll review the play.
And, of course, under further review, we usually do a 10-15, but we've got to make room for Kevin Calabro, as we as should, because we wanted to talk a little NBA. But, of course, switching gears back to football, I know that we spent so much time talking about the Seahawks offseason, the one that gets ripped a little bit nationwide. I know that we had Dan Graziano from ESPN.com on, and he thought the Seahawks had the worst offseason of any team in the National Football League. But the one thing we haven't really spent a lot of time talking about is how the team is, some of the players who have left. And so I know that on Brock and Salk, they had an interesting conversation today talking about what players on the Seahawks will make the biggest impact going to different teams. Let's hear what they said.
I think Jimmy Graham will have the most, like, numbers year.
Yep.
He's going to be in a great fit for him.
Yep.
I think Sheldon Richardson will actually have the best year. But I'll tell you what, that guy fooled me last year. Yep. I'm mad at Sheldon Richardson.
All right, here we go.
All right. Here we go.
Let's go.
I mean, I'm not, like, violently angry or anything, but, like, that guy fooled us. He was supposed to be really good, and he wasn't. What's the deal?
Yeah, you want him more. They want him more.
Why wasn't he good?
You gave up something for him, and in the end, you were willing to offer 1 year and $6 million.
Yeah, look, what's the deal? Like, I can understand what happened with Jimmy Graham. That was on them.
Push comes to shove. Don't tell me he played great. Don't try to fool me with he's doing his job and all of that. You were willing to pay him 1 year and $6 million. That's it.
And Sherm, I don't know.
And by the way, the rest of the league was only willing to give him a 1 year, $8 million deal. So it wasn't like the rest of the league was coveting his services as well. Isn't that a bummer? Can I just have a little bummer minute here? A bummer that the rest of the league looked at Luke Jokel, who, by the way, tapped out after 4 games and had a knee surgery that he didn't play through. So right. I think the rest of the league said, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. The rest of the league said, Eddie Lacy, not even chance, not even bringing you in our building. The rest of the league said, Blair Walsh, sorry. You know what? Your 70% kicker can't win with you. The rest of the league said, Sheldon, as far as D tackles go, even in a lean year.
But those
year,
other ones don't bother
even
me.
Even in a lean year,
the other ones
D
don't
tackles,
bother me the same way. There's something about Sheldon Richardson that just kind of gets under my skin because I thought he was really good. And I don't understand why he wasn't. It doesn't make sense. He should have been really good while he was here. He fits with what they're trying to do. He's got the right body type. He's the right style player. He should have been that interior pass rusher.
You actually
should have been able to do all that.
You actually got him when I want you to get guys.
Absolutely.
Totally incentivized.
And he wasn't good.
To blow it up and have a monster year.
That just bugs me out. So I don't know. Jimmy Graham will have the best statistics.
You know who could have a sneaky good year is Paul Richardson.
Really?
Alex Smith is a guy that's pretty good in taking some of his shots. Jay Gruden's a pretty good coach at getting guys open. And in that system, in a West Coast system that Alex is going to walk into incredibly comfortably, they're going to have 3-4 shots a game to him. I don't know if he can stay healthy for 16, but as far as a system fit of the right coach and a quarterback that's been there and done it at a pretty high level, he could have a sneaky good year, kind of like Golden Tate did, kind of like Jermaine Kearse did, kind of like some of the receivers that have left here and had some production around the NFL.
Well, I disagree on the Sheldon Richardson argument because I still think he played okay. Sure, he didn't have the sacks, but I think he opened things up for Michael Mennon in the pass rush. We'll get into that in a second, though. But I agree with Brock that Jimmy Graham probably is going to make the biggest impact because now Aaron Rodgers is coming back, and Aaron can use him in two different ways, whether it's going to be trying to be at the red zone or downfield. And I think he's going to be motivated and I think do a really good job. And so numbers-wise, particularly, too, when you have Aaron Rodgers, who's arguably one of the top two quarterbacks in the league, in that passing offense, you would anticipate that it's going to be a very good year for him. And naturally, I mean, it's funny because a lot of people, they forget the Green Bay Packers. They kind of write them off, but I noticed that particularly Vegas has not. I mean, they have the Packers right with the Minnesota Vikings. And the Vikings, of course, they make the transition at quarterback and go to Kirk Cousins, which I think probably could be considered to be an upgrade. But I think Jimmy Graham, you know, because what you can look at is a tight end who can catch, you know, 60, 70, 80 balls and get a lot of touchdowns. But as far as Sheldon Richardson and Moore, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I still think he did well. Now, remember, he was making a transition from a 3-4 to a 4-3. And, you know, naturally you thought maybe he could get the sack totals. But again, he, as the season was going on, he drew a lot of double team blocking and some of his run stopping stuff was absolutely off the charts. I mean, I know in that Dallas game, he was all over the place. I mean, did you think that that was a bad signing? Because I don't.
I think we expected more sacks, but I also think that Cliff Avril being hurt and Michael Bennett playing but not playing at 100% had something to do with that as well, because we expected that line altogether to just be crazy good. And a lot of things happened to where, yeah, I think in total they were a little disappointing.
Yeah, but I know that Mike makes a great point in saying that he can only draw $8 million on the market. But then, you know, that's still good money for a defensive tackle. I thought he can probably command $13-14 million, but clearly that wasn't the case. But I still think he played well enough that, I wouldn't write him off. And I think he could have a
very
good
year. He landed
with
a good defense, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he goes with a great defense, a great coach. Mike Zimmer does such a great job overall and a very good team. So I think that could be a big one for them. I think that he can do really a lot of good things. But still, Graham has the edge. And kind of interesting that they both go in the same division, making their teams better.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see. And then you also have Luke Wilson and Deshaun Shedd in Detroit, right?
Right.
In that
correct.
Same division.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they definitely needed some tight end help in Detroit. Eric Ebron did not do well for them. Was a major first round disappointment, and they've let him go. And so I think that could be problematic. Still kind of, and then of course we just don't know about Richard Sherman. We just simply do not know. And the reason we don't know is because he's coming off the Achilles. And, you know, I saw yesterday, it looks like he is going to be there for the regular season for sure. And it looks like he may be able to do some stuff this summer.
He posted a running video, and he looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm. No, and you know he's going to work hard. And you know he's a guy that just doesn't miss practice. He does such a great job of that. That I think could work out pretty well. But no, I think that, and Sherman could be the sleeper of the group, because if he goes there and gives them a Pro Bowl caliber cornerback, which, of course, you know, he's been that for so long, that's going to make that defense so much better. Can he be that shutdown cornerback again? That of course, is a big one. And the guy that we don't seem to be mentioning, what about Michael Bennett? Because I know his playing time is going to drop, because I can't imagine him getting the 70-80% that he's been getting going over there. I think that's just a little bit too much. But, if he goes there and gets a bunch of sacks, that could be huge for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, yeah, I think they have a deep enough rotation. They won't need to play him as much, which will probably help because he has been starting to rack up some more injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can keep him fresh on that deep defensive line, I would imagine he'll have a very good season.
But what we're talking about, that's some good players going to good teams. I mean, think about, you've got Sherman, and they all kind of went, ironically, in the NFC. I mean, you know, the trade for Bennett, he goes to Philadelphia, a team right now that a lot of people think is going to be right among the top four or five teams in the NFC. You've got Minnesota getting Sheldon Richardson. We haven't mentioned Paul Richardson, who got $8 million to go to the Washington Redskins.
Brock said he could be one of the better ones.
Could be. I still kind of wonder, but he sure came on last year. And that's the thing. I mean, when you look at some receivers, it takes a little bit of time to really get adjusted. It really wasn't until like at the end of the third season that you start saying, well, he does look like a pretty good second round pick. And now he gets a deal for $8 million and is a tough loss for this team.
Well, yeah. And he was it his first season? Did he lost a season to injury, didn't he?
Right. Correct.
So yeah, I think he's definitely got some upside. Do you think Alex Smith is a good quarterback fit for him?
Yeah, I think so. Because he's a smart quarterback. He's got the I'm surprised he was able to throw the ball as deep as he did, because he had a pretty good year throwing the ball deep for Kansas City. Now, I don't think that'll happen with the Redskins, but no, I think he's a very good quarterback, and I think he'll do some good things with them, and we'll see. But Richardson, I still think, is more of a number two, number three, and of course he's going there being paid like a number two, so it's kind of a good fit overall. But again, a lot of good Seahawks going to teams in the NFC. That's the ironic part. It's like, okay, and these are mostly good teams. We'll see how it is going to be for San Francisco. I think everybody's kind of jumping too quickly on their bandwagon again, because I still think they're maybe one more year away from going to the playoffs. But overall, they're a pretty good team, getting better and better, and they've got Jimmy Garoppolo, but they really need to get that defense. The defense is going to be the key for them, and if Sherman can help that defense, then they can start to really make a big rise. Hey, you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we will go behind the lines and talk some National Football League. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios,
on demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, of course, we go behind the lines with the NFL, and of course, news will continue to grow, and we got some news breaking right now. The Arizona Cardinals just made a trade. They picked up Jamar Taylor, a cornerback from the Cleveland Browns, and that gives them a chance to give them maybe somebody that can come in as a number three or number two cornerback. It turned out the trade is just going to be a swap of seventh round picks in 2019, and to accommodate the Cardinals, he was willing to take a pay cut. He was scheduled to make in excess of $5 million. Now he gets a little bit over $4 million, so he takes about $1 million pay cut to be able to go over and be with the Cardinals. And they waited until the sixth round to try to draft a cornerback, and that's one of the big areas of need that they have on the team. They needed a cornerback on the other side of Patrick Peterson to try to legitimize. So at least they get somebody for very little cost. Taylor came over from the Dolphins to Cleveland for a sixth round pick, and so that was one move that has been made today. And kind of an interesting one, because again, the Cardinals, they needed some help at cornerback, and now they get some help at cornerback. So that was one where you can see they did it, and of course not too big of a cost, and they get him for real good money, $4 million, over, and have him for 2 years, so it's not like he's going to leave and go anywhere in free agency. So that trade gets done, and of course more draft choices, I'm sure, are going to get done today, because we're up to 181 draft choices that have been all done, and that, which is good. I mean, getting all these things in a very good area, because again, you want to try to get the draft choices all signed, so you don't have any worry of holdout. And that's the great part about this system that was established in 2011, where it's going to be less money for the rookies and less stress for the owners and for the general managers, because you can get your guys and get them at a very good price and get them under contract, and then don't have to worry about it. Odell Beckham Jr. looks like he is going to show up for the OTAs, which I think in many ways is a little bit of a surprise, because he made such a big deal how much he's not going to do anything without a contract. And so now he wants that big contract extension, but nothing is close, and he's caused a lot of worry and concern in New York. But it looks like he will take part this week, or coming up next week, in the OTAs, which that solves some things. But again, how valuable can can he be? Because, again, he's one of the best receivers in football. And now that they got Barkley, Eli Manning, that's a pretty dangerous combination to have, and see if they can really bounce back, because everything went so bad for the Giants last year as far as their offense, with the injuries and then, of course, all the antics that were there and all the drama that was there for Beckham Jr., because that stuff just got way, way out of control. So Odell Beckham Jr. at least doing that. And, of course, I guess the conversation then goes to, what about Earl Thomas? And I know that everybody is pretty well resigned to the fact that if there's going to be an Earl Thomas sighting, it would be at the minicamp, which is mandatory, as opposed to the OTAs, which is not mandatory. And you'd like to have him here. You want to kind of test and see, you know, what's how he feels about things, because obviously to stay a Seahawk, you have to buy in. And that's something that has been a big part of what Pete Carroll has. And this offseason, he felt there was a couple guys, in the case of Michael Bennett and also Richard Sherman, that weren't buying in. And, of course, part of the Richard Sherman thing was he's coming off an Achilles tear, and they didn't want to pay him the money he was making at $14 million. And so, yeah, interesting to see who's going to show and who's not going to show. But for the most part, I mean, you know that the Aaron Donald has not been at the offseason program at all for the Rams, understandably, because, again, he has no deal. But they keep saying that he's getting closer to getting something done. So it's big money poker, I guess you can say. You want to try to get the most you can while you can. And, ultimately, Mara, players, tend to get maybe not as much as they want, but ultimately they still get their money.
Yeah, John, I'm wondering with the Earl Thomas thing, Schneider said that he was under the impression from Earl's reps that he would not hold out. But that can mean different things. That might mean that he won't hold out in the regular season, but he's not planning on attending any of camp. Or it could mean, he's not there right now because these are voluntary, but he'll be there for mandatory camp that starts in June. If he doesn't show up for camp, along the lines of what you were just saying, how Carroll's kind of made it clear that people that aren't buying in need to maybe move on, do you think that they try to work on a trade again if he doesn't show up?
Yeah, because I mean, if he's going to hold out in the training camp, that gets Delano Hill on the field, and if Delano Hill shows that he has the capability of starting this year, then I think what they would do is say, okay, I think we now can revisit the idea of trading Earl Thomas. And that they would do it reluctantly. I mean, they would rather have Earl Thomas because he's a great, great player, and he's meant so much to this franchise. But if he's not going to be buying in and takes it in through a good portion of camp. Now, again, if he just makes a small statement and it's just a short holdout in camp, that's a different story. But if it's going to be some kind of a long holdout, then I think they take the tack. You know what? Maybe it's time to move on, because we can go and see. But the key thing is they would get Delano Hill and kind of get a test run of how he looks in that defense, which isn't going to happen if Earl Thomas is going to be here. I mean, clearly they would rather have Earl Thomas because he is one of the best and possible, even maybe down the line, a Hall of Fame caliber safety. But you got to see if he's buying in. And right now they think they know, but they don't know, and they've got to find out.
Yeah, and it looks like June 12th through 14th are the first mandatory minicamp dates, so we'll keep our eye on that. But I totally agree with you. It's not something they would want to do, but when you've kind of made a big deal this offseason about clearing out any of the negativity and people that aren't buying in, if he held out into the beginning of the season, that seems like it would be an issue.
Yeah, it really would be. And they just want to try to do the best they can right now to try to put the problems behind them, because I think that you can see that they definitely want to all concentrate on just all football all the time and get things right. And that's going to be one of the challenges that they have, because again, it's it's been such a turbulent, I guess you can say, off season as far as the changes and all that stuff. But I think you can see just at the mini camp, I mean, there was a very, very good vibe as far as how everything was clicking together, the competition, the work ethic, all those different things. So now you concentrate on the next phase, which is going to be the OTAs, and that's now getting the rookie together with the veterans, and then really seeing how Russell Wilson looks in this offense, how the running game can improve. I mean, see the valuable work of Mike Solari with the offensive line, see if George Fant can make a move over to right tackle. All those things are going to be all part of the big equation of what's going on. So, I think it's going to be kind of fun to see, but it'd be nice to see Earl Thomas, but right now. Doesn't look encouraging that he'll be there anytime in the next 3 weeks. And maybe we'll see by June 12th. I guess that'll be the next statement to see if indeed where he stands as far as coming on and not coming on. And we can kind of get a gauge. But I think that they want to have kind of this peaceful part going into the mini camp and also into the regular, into the training camp, because again, there's been so much crazy stuff going on this off season.
Yeah, I can't wait to see. And like you said, just from the little bits that we've seen so far, it's really hard to tell in a rookie minicamp, but I really liked how hands-on and intense Solari was with the offensive lineman.
No, he's really good. I mean, I think that everybody is going to get a chance to really enjoy what he does, because, I mean, he's such a good coach. And again, this is not his first tour of duty here. I mean, he has, he was here when Mike Holmgren was here and did a good job with the offensive line. Now it's a matter of trying to see if he can make the transition. And this will be a different offensive line. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that, because, it's going to be one that they can try to be more physical. And that's going to fit the style of trying to run the ball. Again, they're trying to go back to the old way that they were back in 2011 and 12 and 13, where it's all power type running and trying to, get better with the run game and get better with the blocking. And I think Solari will be able to accomplish that, because, again, this guy is really, really good.
Yeah, when we talked to Rob Sims, who used to play for him, he said the main thing he said was that Solari is going to figure out everyone's strengths and weaknesses, put together the line, and that's where they'll be. I felt like that was something to really bank on and be excited about, because of all of the movement that we've had, that hopefully he will find where everyone fits and that will be the offensive line and it will be set.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
Barring any injuries.
That's the thing. Barring any injuries. That's what I want to make sure that they don't do. So, hey, coming back, of course, we'll have a chance. You can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. I want to talk a little bit more about the Mariners as they go through the second, third, and fourth games against the Tigers. Tim Booth from AP will be joining us on the Mariners coming up next. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.